we're in the middle of an ongoing discussion about trees and streams and logging in the state of Oregon and the Oregon Forest Practices Act and how far it specifies that logging should be from streams. The Oregon Board of Forestry is in the middle of a process to consider changes to the rules. We've already talked to somebody at the Department of Forestry about the existing rules. We have heard for people who would like greater stream protection in the person of Nina Bell and Christopher Frisell. Now we turn to Jim James, who's the Executive Director of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the region, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Jim James, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
So tell us who the OSWA represents.
Great question. And the Oregon Small Wooden Association is a nonprofit organization that represents the interests of the 140,000 family forest landowners in our state. Family forest landowners own 42% of the private forest in the state, over 4 million acres. And again, our organization represents their interests.
Is there so what's the average chunk of land of members? I ask this because I'm trying to figure out if this includes the Weyerhaeusers at all or if it's just the small folks.
Yeah, now the legal definition in Oregon of a small wooden owner is a landowner with less than 5,000 acres. And we do have several members who have a couple thousand acres, but our average member has 75 acres of forest land. We take all of our members divided by the total number of acres we represent.
All right, 75 acres, not a huge chunk of land by any stretch of the imagination.
No. And we have a lot of members, you know, with 20 and 40, but 75 is the average.
So, Jim, just in general terms about the application of the Oregon Forest Practices Act, are the rules the same whether you're Jim James or whether you're Weyerhaeuser?
Absolutely, and I think that's a good system. And again, the Forest Practices Act addresses the economic and environmental concerns of forest lands in Oregon, and it should be should have the same rules for everyone.
Now, given the recent history, though, from OSWA's perspective, the Oregon Small Woodland Association, of what the rulemaking has been like. I mean, because there are obviously some disagreements about how stringent the rules are and how stringent they should be. So what's the general perspective from the OSWA?
Yeah, and again, OSWA strongly supports scientifically based forest practice rules. And this entire riparian process is driven by a protecting cold water criteria that's developed by the UQC Environmental Quality Commission. And that standard says that for streams with salmonid, steelhead, and bull trout, you can have no human-caused increase in temperature greater than 0.3 degrees Celsius. So that policy call is driving the process. The RIP stream study did clearly demonstrate that, on average, following the forest practice rules to their strictest interpretation, removing all the trees that is legally could be removed, that 40% of the time you could expect an increase in temperature, and the mean of that increase was 0.7 degrees Celsius. So you don't have to be too smart to do the math and say, well, that's higher than what the protecting cold water standard says. But the protecting cold water standard is not based on science. There's a heat temperature requirement that is pretty well scientifically justified of what salmon, steelhead, and bull trout need for stream temperatures. But the 0.3 degrees Celsius is just a policy call, and it's based on the precautionary principle that that actually was heavily advised by the EPA and NOAA Fisheries. And if there was some science behind that 0.3, if there was some magic science that said, oops, 0.3 is the right number, it would be it'd be a different position that we take. But the reality is the Board of Forestry is trying to use science, the best available science, to come up with a system that's based on science. But they're being driven by a policy call that doesn't have the same scientific rigor. And so our position as an organization is that we should let science drive the train. And there are paired watershed studies, which are good science. Some of them aren't finished yet, but they do have some preliminary information. And they acknowledge the small increase in temperature. They also demonstrate that it's temporary, within 4 to 5 years. It's completely dissipated because of the brush and the other trees that grow back when the sunlight comes in, and it doesn't stay with the stream downstream very far. And I did hear the previous scientist talking about stream temperature downstream, and he's right. There are a tremendous amount of factors that influence what stream temperature is. In fact, when they did the Ripstream study, they had to model the results because there's so much variability in stream temperatures for a whole variety of different reasons. And to suggest that a 0.4 degrees Celsius increase on average over time is a huge catastrophe, it doesn't pass the laugh test. And
but it ends up being a case of my numbers versus your numbers, then, doesn't it? I mean, if they say 0.3 is the standard and you come back and say, well, 0.7 is good enough, I mean, it's really just, you know, scientist versus scientist, number versus number, isn't it?
Well, I suppose you could put it that way. The Board of Forestry has to make a policy call on what is the right scientific justification for the forest practice rules. And they have to consider economics in that determination. Their charge is to determine how to meet the cold water issue at the maximum extent practicable, and that's the language in the law, and they are obligated to consider economics and all the other impacts that those rules would apply. And there is a law of diminishing returns to where what's the cost of that last 0.1 degrees Celsius temperature, particularly when, in the big scheme of things, it doesn't make a heck of a lot of difference.
All right, so what you're saying is that you put a lot of effort in and get a lot of return for the first efforts to get the stream temperatures right, but that you spend a lot more time and energy getting very little back on the back end of this process.
Yes.
We have a call here. We're talking to Jim James, the executive director of the Oregon Small Woodland Association, about stream buffers and logging. Here's John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. Talk about how things have changed over the years in terms of managing the forest and making it right, and especially near streams. I'll give you a short example. I remember in the early 70s being up camping out of Oak Ridge, kind of outside Eugene. I drove through a clear cut, and it was the amount of wasted. It could have just been wood that could have been at least ground up and used for something. But I thought the forest was a disaster for this clear cut back then. Now, a couple of years ago, camping, general area, same, and I was impressed. It was already being replanted, and there was, from what I could see, no waste. So, and especially down to the stream, this time it was buffered, and I imagine in the old days they didn't even think about it. But anyway, whatever you have to say about that, I think.
Yeah. Okay, appreciate
John,
that. Yeah.
Yeah, John, you're exactly correct. Again, you can't tell my age on the phone, but I started my career in forestry in 1970, before the forest practice laws were even passed. And I can tell you there were a lot of environmental mistakes made at that time. And again, foresters are smart enough to know that. And again, the landowners strongly supported the first forest practice rules in 74, and they've been evolving ever since. And they're based on science, and there's been a huge transformation of how forests are managed today versus 40 years ago. And again, I'm proud of the way forests are managed today. I think foresters take their role very seriously. And I think the environment is being very well protected by the current forest practice laws.
Well, that was the question that I was coming to, was whether there's a mindset within OSWA that that there's plenty in the current set of rules in Oregon, that the Oregon Forest Practices Act is stringent enough or perhaps already too stringent. What do you think there?
Well, I think the forest practice rules are very well supported by science. OSWA strongly supports the forest practice laws. And we did a stream survey of our members collecting information about their streams in preparation for this debate. And we had 40 landowners that just evaluated the value that they have on their forest lands based on the current rules, the amount of asset value that they willingly leave behind. And it was $2.5 million worth of timber assets. And again, that's a contribution that landowners are willing to make because science tells us that's the right thing to do. We get excited when someone says you need to double that cost to the landowner. And the reason is because, oh, there's a policy decision that says 0.3 degrees is the right number, and you've exceeded it by a little bit. And I can tell you, forest landowners aren't wealthy, or aren't necessarily wealthy. I guess some may be. But their timberland is their 401k, their savings account, their rainy day fund. And if there's some huge additional restrictions placed on those landowners, we're talking about real impact to real people that are, you know, trying to do the best they can and are very willing to, you know, protect the environment.
We have another call here from John and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jim James from OSWA, the Oregon Small Woodland Association.
Hi. I know a couple of people with woodlands, small ones, and they selectively log, and it makes the wood more expensive, I know. But is there any consideration of just the fact that wood is so cheap? If we would go to a more selective situation, we wouldn't have so much sun and stuff on the streams, so much erosion, et cetera. I'll listen off the air.
All right. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it. So more selective cutting rather than clear cutting, I think, is what we're talking about here, Jim James.
Yeah, and again, a comment I like to make is we have roughly 3,000 members, and we have 3,000 different ideas of how best to accomplish things. And a lot of members do do selective harvesting. We also have members that clear cut. And again, the riparian rules provide that protection for the stream. So, you know, the streams are being protected. You may or may not have heard about Douglas fir being a tree species that is not very shade tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
The two things that
like the sunlight, yeah,
mm-hmm. back the sunlight. So, if your goal is not to grow a lot of healthy Douglas fir trees over time, and you prefer to have a partial cut, that works perfectly fine for that landowner. If your goal is to grow a healthy standard Douglas fir, they need a fair amount of sunlight if they're going to meet their, you know, their maximum ability.
Are the current rules understandable enough to a woodland owner, Jim, that they are able to say, okay, I'm cutting this land at this slope down to that stream. I need to stop 20 feet short, 50 feet short, 70 feet short. I mean, is it that clear, or is it one of these deals you got to pick out the book, measure the width of the stream, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, the Oregon Department of Forestry has a lot of outstanding stewardship foresters that communicate with our landowners. A lot of our landowners are foresters. Some of them need that additional assistance. And there is assistance through ODF. Also, OSU Forestry Extension provides a lot of great assistance. So landowners have the knowledge. The knowledge is available to them when they choose to harvest. Interestingly enough, a lot of family woodland owners don't remove all the trees from the riparian area. It's kind of interesting that riparian areas, their favorite spot on their tree farm. And so a lot of them, you know, don't remove all the trees. In fact, the rip stream study is what it is, but they removed every possible tree that they could under the forest practice rules. And that just simply doesn't happen that often.
All right. So the recommendation that OSWA will make to the Board of Forestry next week is keep the rules as they are?
Actually, we think there's some tweaks in the rules that could help temperature. The Regional Forest Practice Committees have, I believe, come up with a great recommendation to the board, and it would expand some of the basal area requirements on small and medium streams. It would require you to distribute the trees that you're supposed to leave more evenly across the land or across the stream to, again, provide some additional temperature. So, we're supporting those recommendations. We think some minor tweaks probably are warranted, but not a major overhaul of huge no-touch buffers, which are being promoted by a lot of folks.
All right, some of whom we heard from earlier in the program, and I want to thank everybody who joined us in this hour for doing so. Peter Daugherty was with us earlier from the Oregon Department of Forestry, Nina Bell from Northwest Environmental Advocates, and Christopher Sell, the fisheries scientist, and Jim James, the executive director of the Oregon Small Woodland Association. Thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. So the Board of Forestry will meet next Wednesday and consider a process that will come back to a meeting later on in the summer. in which it'll decide how to move ahead. If you're looking for more information about what we talked about today, there is also additional reporting resources that we have put on this from JPR and Investigate West, available at our website, ijpr.org. Thanks for listening to the Jefferson Exchange today. We want to thank you for being here with us. Our producer's Emily Curitan of JPR News. Colleen Pike is at the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Join us next time on the Jefferson Exchange, and please have a great weekend.